Mason, Silver, etc. Mr. Lavery.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Mark Lavery. I represent two consumers named Kelly and Carla Lauer. We are here today to urge this Court to reject the rationale of the District Court, which basically creates a blanket exemption of communications and conduct made by debt collectors, in this case attorney debt collectors, that are directed towards a debtor's attorney, a consumer's attorney. We believe there's no basis in the statute for this position, and that the plain meaning, and when you construe the statute by a plain meaning reading, it's clear that any kind of conduct directed by a debt collector.
Do you make this argument under both 1692C and 1692G? So C is about false and misleading, and G is the required disclosures. Are you arguing that the debt collector has to make the same disclosures under G to a lawyer that he makes to the debtor himself? Or are you just arguing C or neither or what?
Right. We are making two arguments. The first argument is count one, and that deals with what the G notice duties are of a debt collection lawyer when he knows that a debtor is represented by counsel. We believe that the very simple way to look at that is that the statute envisions that once a debt collection attorney knows that a consumer is represented, they can no longer communicate directly with that consumer. They have to communicate indirectly with that consumer, with that consumer's attorney. And hence, it makes sense. When you make your initial demand, and you know that the debtor has a lawyer with respect to this, you just simply send a letter with the G notice to the counsel. It's the costs of compliance are minimal. The benefits, though, are significant because they ensure that the benefits that Congress wanted to provide of giving that G notice, that you do have a right to dispute, and
that
you do have federal
rights.
But
the lawyers know all that stuff, right? The lawyers
know
that.
You'd be surprised, Your Honor. Some lawyers may not. In this district, there's many consumer lawyers who are aware of the FDCPA, but in some parts they may not be aware of that. Nevertheless, we shouldn't deny the consumer the right to get that notice. It's very simple.
It says consumer written notice. It doesn't say anything about lawyers.
Well, and that's where I think this court's ruling in.
You start off like so often, so empty. Talk about plain meaning of the statute. Well, obviously, you've just departed from the plain meaning. You're not talking about a consumer. You're talking about a lawyer.
Well, no, because
plain meaning that doesn't do anything for you.
Well, the statute defines communication, and as this court explained,
it doesn't define consumer as a lawyer.
Right. It does not. But it defines communication as a communication indirectly or directly through any medium. As this court held in Thomas versus Simpson and Sybeck, it's a very broad definition, very broad. And I think it's broad enough, to, especially in light of Hines versus Jenkins.
Well, can't you make distinctions among the subsections of the statute as to whether it could be applied to lawyers or not? D, E, and F, I think, might be construed that
sir,
but some of the others use the word consumer in the text of the subsection. You can't apply that to a lawyer, I wouldn't think.
And that certainly may be the point. That may be applicable, Your Honor. What we're asking this court to do is reverse this judicial doctrine that there's this blanket exemption for any conduct.
Covered by C, right? If lawyers are subject to C, then you can't make any false or misleading statement in the letter to the lawyer. Why isn't that good enough?
Well, I believe if that was the case, then we wouldn't be here. I don't understand. Perhaps I don't understand your question.
You have a stronger case under C than you do under G. What is the statement here that you're complaining was misleading?
We have violations under...
the settlement thing as the other case?
It was a false threat to liquidate property. What happened here...
It's not the settlement issue.
No. Our case, that is Captain versus ARS. We are not a settlement case. Right. That's the next case. This is what they said here is you owe us, you know, approximately $50,000, and if you don't pay us, we're going to liquidate all your stuff. This included values as sentimental items, such as the video of their adopted child arriving from Korea to the United States. And we believe that that's harassing, that's oppressive, abusive, because there was no contractual right, no legal right to just liquidate this property to satisfy this debt. It's a cleaning service.
Are you going to apply the same standard to lawyers as you do to consumers? I mean, your standard that's been established by case law is the unsophisticated consumer, but lawyers certainly aren't in the same league as unsophisticated consumers, are they?
Certainly that's true. And
this business about this liquidating property, I would think the average lawyer wouldn't take that very seriously.
Well,
he probably knows it's illegal, so why would he take it seriously?
Well, a lawyer has a duty to convey communications to their client. So an attorney has a duty to tell the consumer they're threatening to liquidate your property. Hence that communication, which is illegal and specifically violates, Section F, is going to be conveyed.
The statute says anything, in this case, doesn't say anything about communication, does it? This subsection doesn't talk about communication.
Subsection F deals with unfair and unconscionable practices.
Well, so that's, I'm sorry, I used the wrong section. So F is the false and misleading. What's the one that just requires disclosures to the consumer?
The G. That's G. G. That's, is okay. Is the disclosure portion.
Yeah.
Right. And I believe my. I'll reserve the balance of my time for.
But just to return to Judge Cudahy's question. So, what if there's a statement that would mislead a layperson, but it wouldn't mislead a lawyer?
Well, then you would probably want to use an objective standard.
What does that mean?
That, like, for example, if it's patently false. This court is held in the FDCPA.
I understand you. Suppose it's whatever it is. Suppose that only a consumer would be misled. An average lawyer would not be misled.
Right.
Okay. Suppose it's not outright false. It's one of these misleading statements. What is argued in the cases coming up? So how would you treat that case? It's misleading to a consumer, but wouldn't be misleading to a lawyer.
Well, I think you could look to the Dykeman case in the Tenth Circuit.
I'll look at a case. Just tell me what your answer is.
Our answer is that the standard for those kind of communications should be that if it is objectively false.
Forget objectively false.
Okay.
They're just words. I'm saying, suppose it's not false. It's misleading.
Okay.
But it would only mislead a consumer. Would mislead an unsophisticated consumer. Would not mislead the average lawyer. So how do you handle that case? Is that
I think that's
liability or not?
I think that's a fact question. Which
Come on, stop fencing with me.
I'm not trying to fence, Your Honor.
You are. Look, I'm asking a very simple question.
Okay.
Suppose a statement, it is misleading, it would be misleading to an unsophisticated consumer, would not be misleading to the average lawyer. So is the debt collector liable or not liable?
In that case, the debt collector still should be liable because the communication still ends up going to that consumer, and the protection of the FDCPA
unrealistic. If the lawyer knows that this would mislead his client, he's not going to give it to the client without telling him, well, you don't have to worry about this, right? Well, that would be ridiculous.
Of course, and that's why you pay
him. So why, therefore, do you want to impose liability?
Because the Congress has made sure that there's a higher standard.
That's a conclusion. What's a good reason why, I mean, assuming the lawyer is not going to just pass on something he knows is going to mislead his client, right?
Right.
So what purpose is served by imposing liability?
In that it will deter debt collection lawyers from making false statements.
We're talking about statements that are misleading to one group of people but not to another.
Not in our case, but yes, I understand, Your Honor. That's the next case, Captain versus ARS.
That's
what we're talking
case
about.
I'm asking you about something that's misleading, because what you're saying is that, you know, it's like having to talk and baby talk to lawyers, right? Why can't the debt collector, once he knows he's dealing with a lawyer, adopt a level of discourse that's appropriate to lawyers but not to consumers?
I don't have a problem with that, Your Honor.
Well, it's contrary to the argument you're making.
No, because in our case, it was a false threat to liquidate. It was an unfair or unconscionable
practice. That's an F problem. That's right. Not right.
Right.
That's
not the E problem. Right. We're saying that clearly an F claim should survive. We have our F claim in this case.
Judge Cudahy's question, are F claims always the same, no matter who the letter is addressed to, or does it make a difference whether the debt collector's letter is addressed to a lawyer?
For an F claim, because it's unfair or unconscionable practices, I believe it does not matter whether it's conveyed through an attorney or conveyed directly to the consumer.
There wouldn't be the same distinction, but there'd be a distinction between an ordinary consumer and a lawyer, wouldn't there, as to what's unconscionable? You might...
And you
try to tell a big whopper to a lawyer, he'd say, well, that isn't true. There's nothing. I don't see any problem with that. Whereas the consumer might get all panicky about the whole thing.
And that's the problem. The consumers
that's
do
the
get
problem
panicky.
You have. You just can't articulate a standard when it goes to a lawyer. You know, you can't, and you don't have any standard to supply us with, because we're dealing with the unsophisticated consumer.
Right.
And you really don't have a standard for the lawyer unless, as you began your argument saying, a lot of lawyers are ignorant of these procedures. And so maybe it's an unsophisticated lawyer standard. You know, I mean, you began, those are your words, am I right? You said that a lot of lawyers don't understand and everything, so maybe that should be. But the bottom line is you don't have a standard to suggest to us.
Well, yeah, the standard is that, for example, in count one, the standard is that you simply just give the G notice. That's the standard. I mean, you don't interpret a G violation through unsophisticated consumer. It's just you got to give the amount of the debt, the creditor.
Judge Williams is asking about F, not about G.
Right.
Oh, under F?
Right.
And that's when I referred you to the Dyckman case.
Right, and all I'm saying is you just don't have a standard to suggest.
No, the standard that I would articulate is the one that's in Dyckman out of the Tenth Circuit, which is that it's a professional standard. Does it violate does the statement violate what a professional, the code of professionalism, a professionalism standard is the standard?
Well, isn't that...
Does it violate the professionalism?
Judge Fletcher followed that route in his dissent in the Guerrero case, didn't he? Which is recently decided.
Right.
It applies to lawyers, but they have a different standard, so there's no liability.
Right. We would ask you to adopt the reasoning of Syed versus Wolpoff and Abramson and the dissent of the Guerrero case, which is not final and is under
consideration. I don't understand. You're arguing the opposite. First you said there shouldn't be a different standard for the lawyer and the consumer. Now you're saying, in response to Judge Cuddy, yeah, there should be a different standard for the lawyer. It should take account of the fact that he's a professional.
Right. For For those e-violations, which are not the subject of our case, that is the standard that I would suggest.
Talking about F.
For F?
Yes.
For F, the standard, I believe, is whether it's unfair or unconscionable act. You just look at the act.
Okay.
The conduct.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Lavery. Mr. Schoenberger?
May it please the Court. Your Honors, your comments are poignant because the very purpose of the FDCPA is to protect the unsophisticated consumer. Attorneys simply are not unsophisticated consumers. And in fact, in this case, to the statements that these may have been misleading.
So are you arguing for a complete exemption of lawyers from F?
A complete exemption of lawyers from F. We're arguing that any communications...
Yes or no? Is that your argument?
Yes, with the exception that anything that I suppose might be misleading to the lawyer as well, or an unfair practice directed at the lawyer, would be something probably properly addressed in another forum.
Well, make up your mind, would you please? First you say F with an exception, then you say it should be addressed in another form.
Well, it's
so
our position.
Are you arguing for a blanket exemption
for lawyers from
F or not?
A blanket exemption for communications directed to lawyers.
Right.
Yes.
From F.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Well, that goes too far, I think. Because why can't you have a false and misleading statement that would fool a lawyer? Lawyer has no reason to think it's false, so he passes it on to his client.
The purpose of the FDCPA is not to protect the lawyer, it's to protect the consumer.
Of course, but if the lawyer receives something which is misleading even to a sophisticated professional, but he doesn't know it's false, he thinks it's true. So he discusses it with his client, he passes it on to his client. So in that way, you're using the lawyer as the conduit to mislead the client. So why should that be exempt?
That could perhaps be a situation.
Well, make up your mind, would you please? Is that subject to F or not subject to F? Case I've given.
We don't believe that the purpose of the act
yes
is served.
Yes or no? Is it subject to F or not subject to F? Case I've just given.
That is not subject to F.
Okay, well, I disagree with you. Because that's the case in which the lawyer is just being used as a conduit for a fraud against the debtor.
But in any event, I'd point out that...
What's in any event?
That is not the situation in this case. If the court chooses to carve out that type of a narrow exception, it doesn't...
Why isn't that the situation in this case? That is, what is it about the threats in this case that a lawyer would realize was baloney, but the debtor himself might be, as Judge Cuddy said, might be panicked by it.
Well, we have to keep in mind that what happened here was, within a few days of the February letter, the plaintiff's lawyer went out and got a TRO preventing whatever it was that Lawrence intended to do with the property, or at least they stated in their letter. That's absolute evidence that isn't something that fooled or misled the lawyer. He recognized that this is a right that his client had. He went out and exercised it. And in that situation, whatever very narrow exception there might be for misleading a lawyer.
Why very narrow?
Because I believe that the potential situations where a lawyer would be misled and pass on a communication to his client without any caveat given to the client or any understanding that this might be a misrepresentation or might be something that can't...
Well, is there anything language in D, E, or F that exempts lawyers from the coverage of the statute?
There's no language.
We've talked a lot of policy in a lot of these cases, but there's been very little said about the plain language of the statute. It seems to me that those sections on their face would apply to lawyers, unless you wish to interpret them differently.
We do interpret them differently only because...
You're applying a you're saying the policy of the statute is to protect consumers, ergo you want a blanket exemption for lawyers. But there's nothing. And so many of those sections, you can derive that from the language of the section, but I don't think you can for some of them.
Well, you may be able to read that into the section if you choose to, but that would pervert the entire purpose of the statute.
There's nothing about reading that. I mean, look what it says. A debt collector may not use unfair or unconscionable means to collect, etc., without limiting the general application of the following conduct as a violation of the section. Now, some of these are clearly addressed just to a lawyer, communicating with a consumer by postcard, right? That has nothing to do with a lawyer. But others are, you know, other violations could be in communications with lawyers.
We believe that doesn't serve the purpose of the Act, which is to protect not the lawyer, but the consumer.
No, you keep misunderstanding. The lawyer is a conduit. If you succeed in pulling the wool over the lawyer's eyes, that will have the identical effect on the consumer, because the lawyer will advise the consumer about his understanding of the situation. So if you've misled him, you mislead the consumer.
I honestly cannot come up with a situation in which the lawyer would not make some sort of an attempt to verify claims or accusations made against a client that he's been hired to represent with respect to those issues. We don't think that that type of a situation really serves the purpose of the Act.
Well, what if he took these steps and your client was able to conceal what was going on? I mean, lawyers are defrauded from time to time. They're not, right?
Well, I think that type of a situation is such an extreme that it's either unlikely to happen or there are other... The rules of professional conduct between lawyers, I mean, we're talking about litigation. We're talking about lawyers negotiating potential litigation and disputes. They're not likely to...
Oh, please. There have been zillions of cases in which debt-collecting lawyers have been found to have engaged in unfair practices. Collection.
We still don't believe that serves the purpose of the Act. That protects the lawyer
What serves the purpose of the Act? You're trying to suggest that professional norms are sufficient to prevent unfair practices in debt collection. That clearly is not true.
It's not. That clearly is not true, but the purpose of the statute isn't to protect the professional.
You keep missing the point. It's not to protect the lawyers. It's to protect the lawyer's client and to make sure the lawyer isn't a conduit for misleading information supplied to him by the debt collector.
I just don't see under the statute that you can equate a communication with the lawyer to a communication with the consumer.
There's nothing in the statute to prevent that. There's nothing in F to exempt lawyers.
We have to interpret that I understand your point about the conduit, but we have to interpret the provisions in light of the congressional intent. Congress didn't intend to interfere with the lawyer-client relationship and allow and to protect the lawyer from not doing his job.
You keep going back to protecting a lawyer. You missed the point repeatedly, incessantly. We're not talking about protecting lawyers. We're talking about protecting the clients.
I understand the point, Your Honor, and I believe that the Act doesn't cover that situation.
Where do you find that it doesn't cover it? Is there something in the statute that exempts lawyers from F?
Well, the statute itself, I hate to, you know, beat a dead horse, but I do not think first of all, I think that's an extreme situation. You know, if the court wants to carve out that kind of an interpretation for that narrow situation, I don't think that applies in this case. clearly by what the lawyer did. The lawyer was not misled, did not pass on information to the client.
Well, did the district judge find that, or did he just, or did he embrace the complete exemption idea?
The district judge adopted what every court that has looked at the issue has done, including the Ninth Circuit a month ago, and adopted the idea. But in addition to that,
there's no finding, is there, that the lawyer here was not fooled?
There's no finding that the lawyer's not fooled, but the facts of the case, which I attached...
It hasn't been argued, right?
Pardon?
Hasn't been argued.
Hasn't been... What hasn't been argued?
Your backup position.
Which is whether
the lawyer was fooled. There was a false, an unfair practice here.
That point was not argued.
Right.
The facts established that...
So if you're wrong about the blanket exemption, we'd have to remand for a determination.
Well, I think the facts are undisputed, that the lawyer was not...
It hasn't been argued or anything, right? It hasn't been argued.
I'm sorry?
It hasn't been argued, has it?
It hasn't been argued, but the court can take judicial notice of the pleadings and...
Judicial notice? No. You can't bring up on oral argument for the first time an alternative ground for affirmance.
In our brief...
Put all your eggs in the total exemption basket.
In our brief, we attached all of the pleadings in the court below.
We're not going to make an original factual determination. We don't do that. Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Schoenberger.
And
Mr. Lavery, we'll move on to the next case.